wait until I see.
Well, I'm a little hesitant to talk much about it strategically, in that if they are aware of the legal strategy, they may
just
go ahead and refile those charges. So
you gotta wait on that. Huh?
Yeah, I'm gonna decline to talk about it at this point because of that. I mean, I can talk.
Well, let's turn then to some of the other cases you've been involved in. I know that the Capitola Police Department may be paying some money out of its its purse if you have your way. How many cases do you have against Capitola Police Department?
Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 cases against one particular officer.
And which officer is that?
That would be Officer Murphy.
Officer Murphy. What's his first name?
I think it's James.
Have you tried to sit down with James and maybe have Scott Kennedy as a mediator?
No, as a matter of fact, if I see anyone that even resembles him, I go the other direction. He's frightening, you know, as far as I'm concerned. It's my opinion that he is a out-of-control individual who has a tough time maintaining his temper and... Has shown that over and over and over again.
Well, you know, what exactly are these four cases? What kind of injuries has he caused that would lead you to take him to civil trial?
Well, his pattern in practice is to he just, like I said, loses his temper and beats people up, and then claims that they resisted arrest. Mm-hmm. And this is a pattern in practice. It's gone on and on and on. And I just to give you a little insight into how well known this is. His brother is also an officer. He's a highway patrol officer, and had occasion to back when I was doing criminal defense work to defend somebody who had been actually beaten up by his brother, the highway patrol Murphy.
Oh, so this is sort of a family trait.
Well, I think they're homophobes. For one, this particular person, while he was beating him, he was calling him a dirty faggot. This is the highway patrol Murphy.
Hmm.
And by the way, they were en route to the hospital where he stopped, and my client was hooded and handcuffed and beat him.
Hooded? What do you mean by hooded, Kate?
Well, they had pepper sprayed him to the point where he was not vomiting, but spitting up stuff, and so they put a hood over his head. And this happened to be an incident where my daughter actually witnessed this whole thing. It was at the Aptos Club.
How long ago?
Oh, gosh, it's been a couple years ago now.
Are you going to tell the name of the defendant, or is that appropriate?
I'd rather not,
okay.
Unless I got prior permission from him.
Okay.
But
this was Officer James Murphy? Is that
no, this was his brother.
His brother, the highway patrol.
Right, but see, at that point, I didn't know too much about it. I had just heard things about an Officer Murphy,
mm-hmm.
and so when I went into to talk to the district attorney about that case. I will say her name was Caroline Zinn. She's no longer with the DA's office, but she will become a witness in my cases. I went up to her and I said, well, this is that Officer Murphy. And her response said, oh, no, that was the good Murphy brother.
Uh-oh.
This is the district attorney saying this.
Uh-huh.
It was pretty astounding, and then
you decided not to invite them both for dinner at the same time.
Then I got another case of a kid who was beat up by the just so we can get them straight, the bad officer,
the Capitola police officer,
who was claiming to be that my client resisted. And he beat this kid. Well, he has permanent spine damage. He had an MRI, and he's only in his early 20s, and he's got permanent spine damage. Anyway,
so
I went into.
He didn't have that damage before.
No. I went into the. To his pretrial on the charge of resisting arrest,
mm-hmm.
and as I stood outside the chambers, I heard John Minsloff say something to the effect of, that goddamn Murphy beat up another one of my clients.
And who is John Minsloff?
Minsloff.
Who's he?
He's head of the public defender's office.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I thought, well, wait a minute, do we have both have the same client? Well, as it turns out, it was another one that he beat up.
Mm-hmm.
These were within 2 weeks of each other. Two of them are women. Two of the people he beat up are women.
They were talking about the Capitola police officer.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
Now, these were women who were not resisting arrest?
Oh, well, that's what he claimed.
Mm-hmm. I see.
That's what he claimed.
What were they arrested for?
Let's see. I don't know about the one because she has decided not to sue.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one was stopped for... I don't know exactly what she was stopped for,
mm-hmm.
because the court found that it was an unlawful stop and dismissed the case and did a motion to suppress.
Huh.
So, but after he stopped her, when he was handcuffing her, grabbed her arm and squeezed it real tight, and when she protested, he slammed her body against the car. This is according to her, and then pressed against her body with his body against the car to the point where she was, you know, she just...
How big is this guy?
Couldn't breathe. He's huge. He's huge. By all reports, he's in, you know, 6'3", 6'4",
This man, Officer Murphy, is still on the Capitola Police Force,
not
right now.
Svelte. Oh, yeah. In fact, on one of my cases, they actually did an investigation and exonerated him. Yeah.
So there, Kate Wells.
Yeah, so there. So obviously I'm wrong on all of these cases. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, if there's one case, I could understand how, you know, we may have...
erred.
Made a mistake, but...
Now, is this case where he was found resolved by, an internal affairs investigation by the Capitola Police
Department?
Actually,
they hired an outside investigator.
Oh. And is that... Are you still pursuing a civil...
Good buddies with the Capitola Chief of Police.
Well, you want to maintain good relations. So, now, are you still pursuing a civil case in this particular case where it was exonerated?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
And is this like a matter of waiting 5 years? When do these cases actually start getting tried or dealt with?
No, we're getting trial dates in about a year.
Uh-huh. How do the people who are doing, and what kind of money are you looking for? Hundreds of thousands, millions, tens of thousands?
Well, you know, I just don't see how they can afford to take these cases to trial. You know, like I said, each one of these people is going to testify for the others,
mm-hmm.
As to what happened to them.
Are they still living in the area, these people?
To show the pattern and practice.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, one of them lives in Pacifica. One of them lives in Watsonville. And the other two still live here in Santa Cruz, yeah.
So I'm sorry, I interrupted you and asking you what kinds of money are they looking for? I mean...
Well, each case is different.
Right.
Each case is different. You know, the one case, you know, he's done permanent damage to this kid, and so you know, it's big. It's got to be. I mean, you got to take into account that he's going to be limited in his movement the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And see the photographs in that case are so graphic that it's hard for me to look at them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a case where he beat this kid literally from his head to his toes.
Wow.
With
witnesses present?
The only witness present came out after he was already being beaten by the cops, and when my when this person came out from their home and said, "Can I help you?" and my client, evidently down on the ground underneath Murphy, said yes, and he said, "I didn't mean you, I meant the cop."
So that's a sort of a hard road to hoe. Do the Capitola police cars now have video cameras? I know that some,
I don't know.
Santa Cruz police car does, I think.
I don't know.
I might be mistaken about that.
Excuse me, I'm just getting over the flu here.
No problem. Just don't give it to me.
Well, that's it.
So... Okay. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say we've got some kind of new invention here that we can germs come through the phone.
Well, we know that the FBI can come through the phone.
Yeah.
They're one of the biggest viruses we have. What can I say?
Funny clicks and whizzes on my phone lately. So.
Right. Well, so you think that these four, like, we're talking four victims of Murphy that are pursuing lawsuits?
Right.
Are they apprehensive that Murphy will go after them again during this interim period?
Or? Oh, yeah. One actually moved out of Capitola.
Uh-huh.
One of them actually that moved out of Capitola. He was strangled by Murphy to the point where a month after this happened, he was still having trouble swallowing, so he went to a specialist. And the specialist actually could put a scope down his throat, and it could actually see the how Officer Murphy had grabbed him from behind. And
mm-hmm.
he could see the imprint of the resolving hematomas from from how he had been grabbed.
Well, he was demonstrating a compliance hold.
Yeah. Well, that was kind of a funny case, too, in that this was a case where they actually came to his house because one of his roommates was on probation. And all of the other officers that were there, including a couple of probation officers, evidently went upstairs to search this other guy's room, and he had let them in. He was on, and he turned to go to his own room, at which point Murphy grabbed him from behind, choking him.
Oh, this is by his report?
Slamming him, yeah, this is mm-hmm. my client's, yeah,
right.
Slamming him into the wall, you know, just causing cuts on his head and his face, threw him on the ground, laid on top of him, you know. The actual scenario in each one of them is very similar.
Mm-hmm.
My young kid that he beat up, when he was arresting him for a DUI, my client actually, at some point when he said, "I'm, you know, placing you under arrest, put your hands behind your back," as he was putting his hands behind his back, he said, "You know, are you really going to take me to jail?" He kind of turned around and asked, and Murphy evidently grabbed a stick and said, "No, this means I'm going to beat the shit out of you," at which point he ran.
Now, was there no witnesses but him?
No, there was a witness to that.
Huh.
But then when he ran, he was in a dark street, and he tripped and fell, and the officer then started beating him, and that was, yeah.
Now, that was the kid who was disabled for the long...
Yeah, yeah.
I see. So have there been any changes in the Capitola Police Department as a consequence of your civil suits? And we've often said here on the air that the CPRB, the Citizens Police Rah-Rah Board in Santa Cruz, has zero impact on the police department. In fact, they serve to cover up their stuff. And that the way to proceed is with, you know, public forums, press conferences, and civil lawsuits. You are proceeding with civil lawsuits. Has that had any impact, you think, on the Capitola Police Department?
Well, you know, they have a new chief, which, you know, I think, you know, he's the one that had this, you know, lovely policy of stopping and citing people for driving so well over the holidays.
Oh, right. I like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I called him up and never got through to him, but I was going to ask him, now, what would happen when you rolled your window down a waft of marijuana smoke and hit the officer in the face? What's he going to do? Just say, "Well, gee, you're driving so well. Here's your citation for driving."
And here's your citation for marijuana.
Yeah, exactly.
The point being, in that case that was brought out in, I guess, the Metro, is that, you know, you have to have probable cause to
exactly.
stop someone for, as a police officer, even if you want to be nice to them, if you're going to use, like, a siren or a red blinking lights, I guess a police officer as an individual could come up to you and say, "Can I compliment you on
yeah,
what you're doing?" But to pull them over,
I
don't know about that.
It's outrageous.
Yeah.
It's outrageous. At any rate, I think that the thing that I hope for more than anything is that this will have an impact on the individual officer as far as the defendants in my lawsuits, and that while he is under this kind of scrutiny from these lawsuits, that he is probably not beating people up.
You think that perhaps he's beating them up more circumspectly? Apparently, he didn't stop after the first, the second,
no,
the third.
I really do think that, and in fact, I have an example of an officer that I actually want to, I actually wrote a letter of commendation after having had two lawsuits against him. This is a sheriff's officer.
Name of the officer?
Christensen.
Uh-huh.
Who had just a very bad reputation for all kinds of things. And since then, since I've had these two lawsuits against him, which both actually ended up being dismissed, unfortunately, from legal, as far as immunity grounds. But I have heard from many different sources since then
that he shaped up.
That he is just doing wonderful things.
That's good.
That he is being helpful and wonderful and honest in his dealings with people, going the extra mile.
It could have been that woman you introduced him to, though.
So I actually did write a letter of commendation to put in his file for...
I actually have done the same. I've commended officers when they engage in positive stuff. Like,
well, I think it's necessary to have positive reinforcement.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
So,
you know, that's
the two or three officers that are...
We're talking with attorneys. Yeah, right. Well, you know, I mean, it can be more than that, but unfortunately, you know, what I do, and I guess what you do, too, is you monitor the dark side, you know.
Exactly.
We're talking to attorney Kate Wells, who's giving us an update. Kate, you were also an eloquent speaker and participant back in the 1999 city camping ban examination, where Catherine Byers led everybody on a little steeplechase and around the merry-go-round. And
The task force,
too. This was in the 3 months in the winter vacation, 98-99, just after the three new council members, Crone, Sugar, and Fitzmaurice, had been arrested, they should have been arrested, they were elected, and they, you know, they were, part of their platform had to do with decriminalizing sleep in terms of the current law, which still makes it illegal for homeless people to sleep anywhere and everywhere on any public property whatsoever in Santa Cruz.
And with the permission of the owner if they're in view of the street.
With the permission of the owner, and it's going to become even worse after Tuesday when you can only sleep 3 days per month in a backyard.
In this so-called gentling movement that they're being more...
Yeah, they're claiming that back in 99, this is what I wanted to talk to you about.
Oh, yeah.
Back in 99, when you testified, and you actually tried, I guess, to put forward a proposal that has reached the council now in somewhat modified form about saying in emergencies, parks could be opened up, you know, for campgrounds, and you tried to get them to pass an 18-word amendment, which they wouldn't even look at.
Yeah.
And now they're you know, after the Camp Paradise experience where the community came forward.
They got embarrassed.
Yeah, they got embarrassed, and the community, essentially, it's the community doing it that has put them in a position where they have to respond, but the response, of course, is very minor. Worse is the response is to say you can camp for 2 weeks with a group of no more than 15 people if you meet all these eight different requirements, which involve huge amounts of liability, insurance, CEQA, et cetera, and only in three parks, at least two of which are likely to stir all kinds of hostility from the neighborhood rather than in the many greenbelt areas where this was originally planned as an idea where Camp Paradise and other conservation corps type groups could go in camp and so forth and do work for temporary use of the land as a campsite, and they're in the process of getting out of being homeless. You spoke at the mic, and you were eloquent and talked about the importance of, you know, at that time, the ICORN decision, the decision that says you can use the necessity defense if there's a camping case claiming that you had no choice, you have to sleep at night, hence you have to do it, and that you can't be jailed for that, even if it violates a technical code, which...
Sleep deprivation is the... form of torture, you know.
Form of torture, and sleep is a need. You know, what are you going to do?
Well, and more and more, I've been seeing all kinds of studies about what, even if you don't get enough sleep, what it can do to you. and here these people are forced to roam the streets at night, you know, trying to...
And they're getting killed, as we know. A body was discovered 3 days ago. Michael Borland, was that his name, or Michael
Blanton?
Thank you. Yeah, that was not revealed in the Sentinel, but it was revealed in the KSBW news release. And he was found apparently by this couple who are now accused of killing him. I don't know what the deal is because Lieutenant Habey didn't really release that information to me, and probably never will. I guess we'll see it at trial.
Yeah.
But that was in the general area where Camp Paradise was situated. Now, my point would be, while Camp Paradise was there, they didn't have murders, you know. They had people, you know, being helped. And now that Camp Paradise has been driven away, partially by, of course, natural circumstances, but also
taken
by...
taken over again by
gangs and heroin addicts. And just,
right.
you know, and also by presumably less responsible, less well-connected campers. You know, you have a situation...
Right.
I think this is what the police want. They don't care. What they don't want is organized homeless people asserting their rights.
Yeah, even if it does mean that it's an improved system in terms of, you know, trash and waste products and all that sort of thing.
It's a crazy perspective, but it's based as sort of this conservative, you know, deal.
It's the same kind of, you know, it's the same kind of situation with the medical marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, all of these things that the federal government is doing and cracking down on medical marijuana is driving. You know, they say that that all this money is supporting the terrorists. Of course, my perspective on this is that the money that's going to support the terrorists is if they should take every SUV on the road off. You know, everybody's getting 3 miles to the gallon because it's the oil is supporting the terrorists, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
It's the oil money. But at any rate,
nothing to do with oil money.
What they're doing is driving all of these people into the black market.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and so after a while, it becomes so self-evident that you realize that this isn't by accident. This is by design. This is by design because the more crime, the more cops they need, the more, you know, the more important they become and that law enforcement becomes in society. So, you know, causing this situation to become worse so that they can step in. I mean, it's what Bush is doing. It's what, you know, it's all a grand conspiracy, you know.
You paranoid you.
Yeah.
I want to ask you some more about marijuana because I know that in a moment. But let me conclude this camping ban situation because it is coming up in 2 days at City Council for a final vote.
Mm-hmm.
It's a second reading of an ordinance which on the one hand allows the Parks and Rec czar Jim Lang to make exceptions for 15 days for three parks for 2 weeks for 15 people for, you know, if they're all these conditions are met, and they're not going to be, so it's kind of academic.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other part, of course, says that it puts explicitly into law that you can't use yards and business parking lots for more than three days per calendar month. You know, I mean, now, the interesting thing around this has been that...
Whether or not it was part of the task force... guidelines.
Right, well, whether it was in fact passed in 1999 by the City Council, let me put it this way, whether the Council intended for that to be the wording.
Right.
It was the wording that Barisoni put in, but it, so far was it from the intention of the Council that when I've run through the tapes, I'm going to play some of these later today,
mm-hmm.
between 12:30 and 1, in case you're interested,
mm-hmm.
There is no discussion whatsoever of a three-day limit on the traditional yards or in the church parking lots, which had no such limit prior to 99, and actually, as far as I'm concerned, still don't.
Mm-hmm.
But also... if you look at the practices of the police department and of the churches since then, there has been no three-day limit discussed. When a police officer whom I have spoken with went to a Star of the Sea church and on a complaint, he had to tell the people, he woke up the pastor and he went through this business. He had to check whether there was a license for the vehicle because you're allowed to sleep three vehicles to a church parking lot. He had to determine if the conditions were met, but he said there is no three-day condition. We were never told there's a three-day condition,
right.
And he said, and there was training by police after this law passed in 99,
uh-huh.
the changes. However, when I talked to Deputy Chief Locke, I'm told there was no such training, and there was no written material issued, even though this officer remembers that written material.
Uh-huh.
So I'm forced to conclude that the Chief Belcher has come up with a sort of a party line, which his subordinates are following. And what this is going to lead us to is what you were talking to about back in 1999, when you spoke eloquently at the mic. We may be playing your testimony too later today, and you and many other people who just, there was so much sentiment for a change in the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance and other sections as well, but particularly the abolition of that section. You were saying, if you're just making more work for me, you're going to put me in a position where
right.
I get to go to court for these injunctions and
right.
so forth, but in fact, of course, you never did, mm-hmm. nor did other attorneys in the area. And my question to you is, and because people out there have often proposed to me the idea of what would it take to go into federal court to get a restraining order against this practice of harassing homeless people where there are no legal places to sleep. As of March 15th, perhaps March 1st, and certainly by April 1st, there will be less than 40 spaces for 1,000 to 2,000 people to legally sleep in Santa Cruz. What kind of funding does it need? How long would it take? What's involved in that kind of an injunction?
Well, I would say that probably somewhere between 50 and 100 hours of work for an attorney.
Mm-hmm. And at $100 an hour, or how much is the average attorney would that be?
Well, that's obviously
that's cheap,
know,
or
pretty cheap.
$200 an hour? I don't know what.
I was, you know, in the last case I was awarded attorney fees, it was a $350 an hour.
Uh-huh.
But still, I mean, even if you did it rock cheap at $100 an hour, we're still talking, you know, a huge amount of
$5,000 to $10,000.
So, I mean, and it's something, you know, I do so much work that I'm not reimbursed for, that I just don't have.
I'm not suggesting you do this, Kate. Not at all. Don't feel guilty. I'm just saying that I'm trying to get some understanding of the dimensions so people who are listening can either, you know, decide they want to do a fundraising drive or, you know, grab some legal students from San Jose's, I don't know, Santa Clara Legal, whatever they got up there, over there. I'm just trying to understand the dimensions of this. And
right.
Now, is there a lot of upfront money that has to be done in terms of court costs or?
Well, what it would be in my circumstance is that I just don't have the money, the means to support myself while I would be devoting that many hours to that kind of a case.
Right.
You know, that's my situation. There may be other attorneys out there who, you know, have the big bucks who wouldn't need that sort of thing. I mean, you know, I think that one of the things that might be a route that should be taken is to get a hold of the attorneys who did handle the Eichhorn case.
Mm-hmm.
Who are, I've forgotten the name of the firm, but I know it's one of the top five in the, it's a big, big law firm in the state.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I think all over the United States. And see if they're interested. I mean, I can't imagine that they wouldn't be. The Santa Ana Ordinance, which was the subject of the of the Eichhorn decision, is a much kinder and gentler ordinance than ours.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, in that ordinance, they don't even mention sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
Given the fact that they were willing to take that case for Eichhorn, you know, maybe they would be in a position to take that the sleeping ban on a pro bono basis. So that's certainly one route that I would look into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because these big, I know that the big law firms are doing less and less in the way of pro bono work as the economy becomes more.
What about
more
grants? I mean, are there nonprofits you would suggest people look into as far as getting some kind of funding for this? I mean,
I'm probably the wrong person to ask about that because,
yeah,
you know, if I knew, I'd probably be applying for myself. So
we can send our shekels to keep you going.
Hey, any donations are welcome. You,
well,
know,
you know, for a while you were involved in two efforts to supply medical marijuana to local people in Santa Cruz. One was the club on, I guess it was Maple Street,
mm-hmm,
and then the other was the one that you down on Seabright that, mm-hmm, you know, you attempted to get going, which is going to serve, what, 800 to 1,000 clients?
Yeah.
And then Mayor Sugar was unwilling to consider a medical emergency, and
mm-hmm,
the law was apparently rewritten to essentially assist.
Make it impossible to have a lawful center.
Except for WAM, which apparently has some
No, they're not legal.
But they aren't. Well, what's the difference between WAM and how can WAM operate and you can't? What's the difference between those two clubs?
Well, Valerie Correll helped to write the ordinance,
mm-hmm,
which then made it impossible for her to become legal.
Why is it impossible for her to become legal? What in the ordinance makes it impossible?
She is not in a zone. It was a zoning thing,
mm-hmm,
and what they did is they relegated us to certain industrial areas and commercial areas,
mm-hmm,
and then there are all these restrictions, and you know, one of them being you can't be within, you know, 10 miles of a school and, you know, all these
really?
Things. No, no, no.
But not 10 miles,
no,
but certainly.
No, I'm just joking.
You're being graphic in your,
yeah,
in your sarcasm.
And, of course, we had found a location that we thought was in their zone.
But apparently KSBW found you.
Well, no. This wasn't Seabright. This was the old, what you call it, that restaurant across from Takara.
Oh, right.
It
was over on
Impossible.
Over on Soquel Avenue.
Yeah, and they told us this was the perfect location, and we plunked down first and last and deposited
on it. And then Barrios Unidos suddenly opened up a school.
Suddenly Barrios Unidos became a school, which was down the street, yeah.
Right.
At any rate, they zoned us out of existence, basically, because in order to find a location that it would be affordable, number one, to find something for rent, for one, was impossible. Two, affordable. Three, even after we found the location, then they said, oh, well, you can't function there without a use permit, which is going to require, you know, 14 sets of architect's drawings and all the ADA requirements and all of the, you know, I mean, it just became obvious that they weren't...
Why can't you operate illegally like WHAM does?
Well, that's what we should have done. I mean, you know, obviously, in hindsight, mm-hmm. as I look back at it, we should have just remained, you know, low profile and done it illegally. But we thought, gosh, how stupid were we, that the reason they were passing this ordinance was so that we could have a location for our medical marijuana patients where they could go and hold their head up high in an area where they didn't have to feel like they were going to get mugged mm-hmm. in their wheelchairs. I mean, we really, truly thought this was the purpose of the ordinance. We didn't realize till later that it was just a little show to make them look good
mm-hmm.
That had no intention whatsoever of making it user-friendly.
Now, I've been bad-mouthing poor Valerie Corral on the air for not standing up for the cannabis pharmaceuticals.
Yeah.
Am I being too cruel?
You know, I really hesitate to be critical of anyone who's doing the, you know, good work like Valerie. You know,
mm-hmm.
and she's a personal friend, and she remains a personal friend.
Right.
You know, if I had had my druthers, I would have rather had her be supportive of us.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, at the time, I guess. Just didn't seem like the right thing for her to do. Maybe she was more probably politically savvy about remaining low profile than we were.
Of course, the claim they had was that you were selling for profit and they were, what, dispensing on the basis of need or something?
For donations. The required donations.
I see.
A tithe, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
There's a tithe in the affairs of men.
Right, right, yeah. I can assure you we weren't doing it for profit. I can assure you by the fact that I have $10,000 worth of credit card debt that I'm still trying to pay off.
But that just might mean you're a bad businesswoman, Kate.
Yeah, right.
What about the Oakland Cannabis Club, or was it, I think it was Oakland that got an emergency ordinance passed by Oakland. Would that have been usable here in Santa Cruz?
Well, of course it would have.
What would it have done here?
Well, it would have made it so that it would have declared it a medical emergency, in which case it would have... made us lawful.
Similar to needle exchange?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, as it turns out, all of that may be for naught because we now know that the feds are targeting the medical marijuana facilities in San Francisco at this point, and there's a they're going after the Oakland Club as well.
Yeah, we heard about that. Actually, we had Andrea Tischler on the air, Andrea, and she actually was telling us that she had a big sign for Marty Wormhout right in front of her Compassion Flower Inn.
Mm-hmm.
But then she learned that Marty Wormhout, a candidate for supervisor along with Mark Premack and Michael Schmidt, had come out essentially against what's called the Sonoma Guidelines.
Right.
Did you follow that? Do you want to explain what that's about?
Well, what that's about is that the major problem with what has happened after the passage of Prop 215 is that the state has failed to initiate any kind of statewide guidelines. as far as how many plants you can grow legally, and that sort of thing. As a result of that failure to issue statewide guidelines, we have a crazy quilt of law enforcement for medical marijuana all over the state. Every county is different. You can be legal in one county, step over that county line, and in fact, in Santa Cruz, it's different in the city and the county. So how does one know whether or not? I mean, it's, you know, what you do is you find out from the district attorney that you were growing too many. You know,
after you're busted.
Pardon?
After you're busted. And your marijuana is confiscated.
Right. So what we were trying to do is get them to establish some guidelines, which they've done in Sonoma, as to how many plants you can have. Now, you know, my feeling on it is, and their objection to that is, of course, that would be making them into doctors who are deciding how much someone could grow. That's not the issue as far as I'm concerned. It seems to me that as long as you'd have something from your doctor that would say, you know, this is how much this person should use a week, that would be also a guideline that they could use. At any rate, the situation is now that you don't find out until after you're busted that you're growing too many.
Well, wasn't there also a deal that it's not just that the guidelines were unclear, but they had to do with the number of plants rather than the amount of marijuana you can get
exactly.
from the plants? And that Sheriff Tracy apparently didn't like the idea, which Sonoma has worked pretty well,
mm-hmm.
that you're allowed to essentially harvest a certain finished amount of product. Not
it has to do with square footage.
Square footage of grow space or something?
Exactly. And that is the most accurate way of ascertaining yield is by square footage. This whole idea of plants, I mean, you know, it obviously the variables are so huge that, you know, one plant can yield as much as 2 ounces or as little as you know, nothing. So it's the square footage that it's because it's the amount of lights that you have
mm-hmm.
that will determine how much that's actually what it is. It's the wattage.
Mm-hmm.
That makes that determines whether or not you know what the potential yield is.
Now I know that I haven't heard that Wormhout has changed her position yet. I still see this huge Wormhout for Supervisor billboard in front of the Compassion Flower Inn.
Hmm.
And I know that Michael Schmidt got in touch with Andrea. He's also running for supervisor and has a much better position on homeless issues, which interests me.
Mm-hmm.
But he apparently said he would be, you know, he liked the Sonoma guidelines. He thought mm-hmm. that there should be, you know, that was reasonable for the police department, the sheriff's department in this case, to work within similar guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the question is, why is Marty soft on Sheriff Tracy? I mean, is there some, you're looking at the supervisor's race. You want to give us some thoughts on his upcoming clowns who are all running?
All I can think of is that since Mark is running unopposed, that she realizes that she's going to have to work with him for the next 4 years.
Mark Tracy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it's just very distressing to me that he's running unopposed.
Kate Wells for sheriff?
Yeah, I can't.
You have to be a law enforcement officer.
You have to be in law enforcement in order to... Yeah, that's another whole issue.
So he is running unopposed.
He's running unopposed.
Now, so is that it? I mean, can somebody enter the race late and actually do
well,
something?
He could do a write-in campaign, I suppose.
And when is this? We're talking March 5th? Or
yeah.
So he'll win March 5th and we're stuck with him for 4 more years?
Yeah.
I hadn't even realized this.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good
look
grief.
At your sample ballot.
Where have I been?
Yeah, look at your sample ballot.
Incredible.
You know, it's... This is a time for the none of the above, which I still can't believe the people of the state of California didn't pass.
Well, what about the supervisor candidates? Do you have any reflections on that race?
Well,
from a civil rights attorney's point of view,
I haven't taken a huge amount of time with that race because my supervisor's already been.
You're outside the city.
I'm in first district, yeah. So I'm.
How about the DA's race?
Well, I'm supporting Bob Lee. I'm not real optimistic because he's spending, you know, $5,000 to Kate Candless's hundreds of thousands, whatever she's been making raising to, you know, in her little outside Nazi money.
Now, what do you mean Nazi money? What are you saying, Kate?
Well, I don't know. I have some problems with her declaring herself to be a Democrat and declaring herself to be liberal and declaring herself to be against the death penalty when she remains married to Daryl Allen Gault, who we all remember.
No, he's the that wild and crazy guy on KSCO. He used to call homeless skunks, punks, and drunks.
That's it. That you got it.
I remember him.
You got it. And she's from Sacramento. Bob Lee's a homegrown boy.
Yeah, so they're also both gutless on the drug war. I talked to Lee at length about a week and a half ago. He won't come out for harm reduction measures like inhalation rooms or injection rooms, which are being used in Switzerland.
Well, I heard this expression a few years back, and I think that it's very apropos in this situation. It's not the evil it's not the lesser of two evils. It's the evil of two lessers.
Very much less. Well, the other thing I told Lee is he's got to wipe that smirk off his face. That endless smile is just reminds me of Officer Seeley. But these are all neither here nor there. What are the issues that we should be talking about? What about the war and any implications on the legal system you've seen about this? You know, the Patriot Act, the war, any local reverberations?
Well, certainly the issues of the $3.2 million that they spent on the commercials during the Super Bowl, saying that it's all these medical marijuana people that are supporting the terrorists, and then the subsequent crackdown that's happening in San Francisco. A personal friend of mine, Ed Rosenthal, is facing 40 years in federal penitentiary.
Medical marijuana folks are supporting the terrorists? What is this?
Well,
maybe I missed that.
Well, they didn't say medical marijuana, but they said that drug money is supporting the
drug
terrorists.
Drug money, I see.
But then they turned around and twisted that into it being the, you know, medical marijuana, which is what's in San Francisco. So, I had somebody say, well, at least with the war on terrorism going on, they're not going to have the money to continue on with this war on drugs. Well,
hey, look, they're growing heroin again in Afghanistan. They got lots of money now.
Yeah, I guess, you know, it just the way I look at it in a broad sense is that what's happening on an international scale is the exact same thing that's happening on a local scale here in Santa Cruz, and that is that our police force, i.e. the military, has become a personal and private police force for multinational corporations. We are there because of oil. We have our tanks placed in Saudi Arabia because of oil. We've propped up the government in Saudi Arabia because of our oil. So we basically have are using our military might to protect private interests right. So at any rate, that's on an international scale. On a local scale, obviously the police have become a private security force for the merchants. That's how I look at it in a large sense.
What about locally? I mean, I know there's a lack of anti-war activity in this county.
Boy.
I mean, what would be the targets that people should consider as in terms of the war machine in Santa Cruz City and County? What are the appropriate places to raise our voices in your mind?
I don't know. I just think that any way you can raise your voice. I guess that's probably the thing that's the most distressing to me about what's been happening. And I don't know how much of it is media hype and how much of it is true, but you know, I don't see the level of outrage even among friends of mine that I consider to be, you know, intelligent people. I don't see the I see this blind patriotism, you know, that's swept over the country, you know, and I don't know. I'm distressed. I'm distressed at the number of cars I see with, you know, big American flags here in Santa Cruz. I don't know. I'm
thinking of going to Costa Rica. Are we?
I'm looking at it.
Well, you know, you've been able to successfully make changes in the legal structure here. I was reading over the penal code for California about, there's a lot of language about taking matters to magistrates. It happens in a lot of the penal code sections. You see about, you can either go immediately to a magistrate or you can wait to get booked. I mean, this is sort of language used in the code that I hadn't even been aware of except through talking with you and other, some people call them right-wing extremists who have this constitutionalist perspective on the law. But, you know, you've been able to get the sheriff's department to essentially put out a form which requires people, or the police officers, to check that they inform people that their right to be taken to a magistrate. Are people being, in fact, informed of this right? And what does this right involve?
This right involves 40302 of the vehicle code, which states that if you demand to be taken to a magistrate, they must take you directly to a magistrate. And if a magistrate isn't available, in other words, if it's not during court hours, they have to take you before an impartial person, who's usually the head of the jail, to a probable cause hearing, mm-hmm. an immediate bail setting.
Why would anyone ever want to do this? I mean, isn't this, as distinguished from, say, getting booked and released on OR or on bail?
Well, certainly if there is some issue as to the probable cause for the stop, then you have an immediate determination by magistrate whether or not there was probable cause.
Has this been successful in Santa Cruz in any case you know of?
Not yet.
Mm-hmm. I mean, no one's been taken to a magistrate, or no one has successfully won such a hearing?
No one has even been taken to a magistrate, as far as I'm concerned. As far as I know, the only person I know who has actually asked to do it was not taken, and that's something you ought to take up with Quigley.